Case today is number 054484, James L. Northcutt against the General Motors Plan. Mr. Weldy.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ron Weldy on behalf of James Northcutt, Lewis Smith, and the proposed class. The issue before the court is whether General Motors, as a fiduciary of a long-term disability plan and a pension plan, and these plans as legal entities, had the ability to contract with beneficiaries and participants of ERISA plans to create enforcement procedures and remedies outside those dictated by Section 502A of ERISA. Is the contention of appellants that the answer to this query is no? The Supreme Court and this court have made it resoundingly clear that all beneficiaries, participants, and fiduciaries seeking relief on an issue governed by ERISA are limited to the enforcement procedures and remedies articulated in Section 502A.
Mr. Weldy, is it your position that contracts that in any way provide for an offset of Social Security benefits against ERISA benefits are unenforceable? Let's divide that into two different groups of contracts. One group of contracts is something that says if you ever become entitled to Social Security benefits in the future, the amount of your benefit under our plan will be reduced by the amount of the monthly payment of the Social Security benefit. So, you know, it's a break-even proposition. And the other is the retroactive kind of contract that we had here that says if it ever turns out that you were entitled to Social Security benefits, we're going to offset that. So you think taking Social Security into account at all in ERISA plans is unlawful?
No, Your Honor, that's not the position of appellants at all. And it's my understanding, or at least it was brought up in appellee's brief, that somehow or another, perhaps it wasn't articulated well enough by myself, the district court was under the impression that we were attacking that ability to offset Social Security benefits from the pension or long-term disability benefits at issue. That's not what we're trying to do at all.
So to narrow your argument, I take it then, you're conceding that going forward, the plan would be able to say, okay, you're getting $200 a month from Social Security, so we're going to reduce by $200 a month what you get from us. And okay, so is it then your view that retroactivity is unenforceable?
It's our view that if they're going to retroactively recover the overpayment, which is a result of a Social Security award, a retroactive Social Security award, if they're going to recover that through a self-help mechanism, simply by denying or reducing the benefits that are supposed to be coming to a particular beneficiary, that particular provision of the plan, or any separate contract for that matter, is void as a matter of law pursuant to ERISA.
All right. Let me ask you then the positive question. I understand that you're attacking it in this offset sense. You know, when it doesn't, there's an obligation to pay the lump sum. If the lump sum isn't paid, then what the plan does is it reduces for the future. How, in your view, could such a contract as existed in this case lawfully be enforced? If you're saying ERISA preemption, then it's not going to help you to say go to state court. If you're saying it's federal court, you know, I just want to know, is there a universe out there somewhere of ways that these kinds of arrangements can be enforced, or is the true bottom line that you just can't do it?
Your Honor, if we're talking specifically about the ability of a fiduciary or a plan entity to not go to federal court, because we wouldn't agree that there would be any state court right of action, and the courts uniformly across the country have pretty much stated that. But if we're talking about a fiduciary plan entity skipping district court in attempting to recover an overpayment, any of those types of arrangements would be void as a matter of law simply because they are not articulated in any sense in Section 502A, and the Supreme Court has stated on numerous occasions that that is the realm of procedures and remedies that are available to all fiduciaries, beneficiaries, and participants pursuant to ERISA.
But of course, that's not what happened here. What happens here is your clients are the ones who go to federal court, quite appropriately. It looks to me like there's not a problem at all under 502, with their effort to sue to enforce what they regard as their rights under the plan, and the plan comes in and raises a defense and says, we don't owe you any money going forward because here's this contract that you signed where you said we can offset in the future retroactively awarded Social Security benefits. So I still don't have any idea how you think a plan could ever enforce a contract like this. And I've given you the more specific configuration of how you don't even want the plan to have a defense in a suit brought by a plan participant.
Your Honor, this suit is not attacking the ability of a fiduciary and for a plan to have in it written a reimbursement provision that says if somebody doesn't repay an overpayment, we have the right to go to a court and sue in equity for that overpaid race. We're not attacking that at all.
I mean, this court has said you can have constructive trust. The Supreme Court has just decided a case, the Empire case, that also, I mean, these are all slightly different variations on a theme, of course, but I don't see where in ERISA it says plans are unable to defend and say we don't owe you money when they're asked for money based on a contractual relationship like this.
Your Honor, the point is that their authority, the contractual authority upon which they are relying, is not permitted by...
Why? What in ERISA says you can't, as part of a plan, have this kind of commitment? You just said you can have a commitment to reimburse.
What we're attacking is the self-help mechanism. If GM had went to court and sued for these monies from Mr. Northcutt and Mr. Lewis, they would have fell within the constraints of Section 502A.
But they didn't. They just reduced the amount of money they paid. Now, I understand perfectly that's an action-forcing event, shall we say. You know, the people could either acquiesce to it or they could sue. But isn't it important that they didn't go to court?
We don't believe it is, Your Honor. And the reason is because what is the use of having this strict, reticulated, I think is the word that the Supreme Court likes to use when describing Section 502 enforcement scheme, if we're going to let a fiduciary or a plan simply write a contract that says, hey, we don't care about that stuff. We're going to make up our own way of recovering this overpayment. We don't have to follow 502A3. We can, in essence, get legal relief here. We're going to take
different.
Your future.
You know, legal relief runs against all of your assets. They're just taking a future amount of money that they're otherwise going to be paying you and adjusting it. They're not going after anybody's, you know, boat or house or anything like that. They're reducing a future payment.
And what started me on this whole thinking, Your Honor, is the fact that GM, if they were to go to court under 502A3, could only sue under equity,
right.
And they could only
That's
sue
right.
for the race. And they're
That's
not
right.
they're not getting the race here. They're not trying to obtain the Social Security.
Well, it doesn't exist.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct. And if they were to go to court, they could plead an action, and they would have a cause of action. But once discovery played out, they would learn that there was no suit to be. There was nothing that they could recover from.
Mm-hmm.
We do not believe that a fiduciary or a plan entity can do via contract what cannot be done if you went to court. And the reason is it follows the preemption lines, and that is simply, if a state can't do it, I don't see how GM or fiduciary, or any other fiduciary for that matter, could pull something off to say the state of Michigan couldn't write a law that said exactly this. Your Honor, if there's no more questions, I'd like to reserve this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weldy. We'll hear now from Ms. Butler.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kay Butler appearing on behalf of the defendants, appellees. In this case, Your Honors, the plaintiff appellants don't dispute that due to the retroactive lump sum award of Social Security benefits, they received a benefit overpayment under the GM pension plan and or the GM disability plan. They don't dispute that the plan language requires them to repay those overpayments, and that the plan language further allows the fiduciary to recoup the benefit overpayment through an alteration of the performance obligations under the pension plan and or the disability plan. The fiduciary sets off the future benefits through the recoupment of the overpayments. Both of the plaintiffs' beneficiaries in this case, further beyond the plan language, they signed agreements acknowledging the fact that they would not only have to reimburse for any benefit overpayments, but that there would be a set off of future benefits in the event that they didn't make those reimbursements. There's no support for any argument that those provisions are unenforceable.
This is all action where you provide the funds or not provide the funds, but you don't take any action. There's no action you can take against them.
Exactly, Your Honor. This 502B3 governs when a beneficiary, when a participant, or when a fiduciary can bring a civil action. That's not what we have in this case. It's a set-off provision of future benefits. In ELISA versus Rebestos, the Supreme Court recognized the legitimate value of the set-off provisions to reduce the cost to the plan. In this case, Your Honors, the set-off provisions are entirely consistent with ERISA's provisions and policy objectives. The set-off provisions are in accordance with the federal regulations, which clearly recognize that these type of set-off provisions are excluded from the definitions of assignments or alienations. As Judge Wood indicated, GM did not bring this action. GM merely raised a defense provided by the plan provisions and the contracts signed by the participants, that there was a set-off in this case.
Ms. Butler, I have a question for you about a somewhat different matter, which is why GM agreed to stay class certification. I have my own issues about whether that's consistent with Rule 23, but at the moment you have a judgment that runs only against two people. If there had been class certification, and if you were to prevail in this court, you would have something, of course, that runs against the class, that's binding on all members of the class. And I find it very odd that staying class certification, again, putting to one side obligations to move on that under Rule 23, seemed like a reasonable thing to do.
It was in the interest of judicial and attorney resources not to pursue or defend against the class certification issues at that time.
But why aren't you better? I mean, you know, you're better off, you're worse off. It's the old thing, you know, plaintiffs love class actions when you're hoping for relief, and defendants love them if it's a settlement class and they can get peace against a broader group of people. But you now have a much smaller victory if you win than you would, and I suppose you risked a greater loss had you lost, but that's the kind of assessment that you're supposed to be making.
It was a risk weighing, Your Honor, and it was at the suggestion of the court that we deal with the legal issue prior to the certification.
Worried about that, but okay.
In this case, the district court correctly held that Great West and similar cases by the Supreme Court did not apply to this case because the plan fiduciaries did not commence a legal action, but instead adhered to the plan provisions. Great General Motors was not seeking, or the plans, to impose any type of personal liability on the plan participants in this case, and nothing in Great West or the Serboff case recently decided by the U.S. Supreme Court suggests that the plan cannot enforce the reimbursement provisions through an alteration of performance obligations as we have in this case. Instead, in this case, the recoupment of the overpayment is through the reduction or suspension of the future benefits. Cases such as Great West or Serboff, or the preemption cases cited in the reply brief filed in this case, do not hold that the assertion of the reimbursement provisions violate ERISA or are otherwise invalid. Again, 502A3 applies to when a fiduciary may bring a civil action. No civil action was brought by the fiduciary in this case. Instead, it's just enforcing or following the plan provisions in this case, which allow for the set-off. In particular, as to the preemption cases cited in the reply brief, all those cases involve situations where plan participants or beneficiaries brought a civil action but attempted to exclude or get around the ERISA provisions by basing them on state law claims. Clearly, it was a preemption issue, again, but it was somebody bringing a civil action, not following the plan provisions, and as is the situation in this case. Unless the court has any further questions, we'll rest upon our brief.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. You have one moment left, sir.
Your Honors, I just simply want to pose this example. If the state of Michigan were to draft a law that stated that a fiduciary that falls underneath Michigan law could upon giving, say, three notices to a beneficiary, simply implement this type of regulation or this type of reduction or suspension of their medical benefits, their disability benefits, their pension benefits, this court would hold that that law is preempted underneath a long line of cases. I do not see how GM has more power than a state in this country, just simply because they are actually the drafters of this contract. There's nothing in ERISA that says they have a right to do this or that they have a right to expand upon what ERISA's enforcement procedures or remedies might be. They are receiving legal relief in this matter simply because they are not obtaining the race. They are obtaining future monies. And as the Supreme Court said in the Great West versus Knudsen matter, that is not equitable relief. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Welby. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.